Anna Hawkes, and once again, this is Dakota Talk Radio, and we are going to be talking to the co-facilitators of the Batterers Re-Education Program that is sponsored by the Women's Lodge, the domestic violence shelter located here in Lake Andes. And so we're just going to go ahead and get started, and I'm going to let them explain what the program's about, who they are, what the services are, and who should participate in this program. So first of all, I'd like to encourage Rich to sit right up here close to the microphone. Okay, so first of all, the facilitator, the male facilitator for the Batterers Reeducation Program is Richard Milda. And so I want to welcome Richard to Dakota Talk Radio. And I want to say Pidamia for being with us tonight, for taking some time out of your evening. And I would like you to go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you. Tell us where you're from and who you are.
Well, hello, Donna. Thank you for inviting me to Dakota Talk Radio. To my listeners, I want to say good evening, and it's good to be here and to talk about the services we're offering here at Lake Andes. My English name is Richard Milda. My mother is Deanna Stops at Pretty Camps. My father is Larry Milda, and he is of the Totem Odom Nation, that's Pima. And my mother comes from the Absaloga and Oglala people, and also the Shoshone, Northern Shoshone. And I was born in Crow Agency, Montana, and been moved around quite a bit during the Vietnam era. My father was in Vietnam, and I lived in California and Dallas and Florida because of his tour of duty and service. Lived on my dad's reservation back before casinos. So we were, the tribe that my dad is enrolled at was very poor at the time. I remember living in a mud house, adobe type, because I had to live with my paternal grandmother during the Vietnam era, and had the chance to be raised by her, and lived on my mother's reservation where I'm enrolled in Crow Agency, Montana. Mm-hmm. So grew up in both climates. And why the mix is Relocation Act. Mm-hmm. My parents met in Chicago. My mother was going to college, and my father was in the Relocation Act, and they met there. So that's why, it's kind of a real different mix of ancestry that I have. Mm-hmm. And so I've been, lived in Sioux Falls since 76, where mom finished her education, and lived in this part of the state for a few years. And it's a lot different than it is now. I mean, it's gotten so big, and it's becoming a metropolis. But my most meaningful work that I've done was working and starting in chemical dependency, and did that in Native American Alcohol Treatment Center. Worked there a few years. Worked gang outreach in Sioux City with the Sioux City school system. Worked for, from there, Keystone Treatment Center, Sioux Falls Canton, and then Flanjou Indian School. I was a chemical dependency counselor there, which was exciting because that's where I graduated high school. Mm-hmm. Was in Flandreau. And mm-hmm. So, and then from Keystone, I went to Pine Ridge, where I saw some material that had to do with a lecture I did. And the lecture I did was called the Teapot Theory. And then I seen this material that Sacred Circle had, and it had to do with internalized depression through colonization. And mm-hmm. I thought, wow, what is this? And how are they using it? And I saw that with in connection with domestic violence, and I was very excited about that, and then made some calls and, you know, found out that there was a domestic violence program in Pine Ridge that was available for to do some work with batterers. And so that's where my journey started doing this work, was in Pine Ridge and working domestic violence. And I was really excited about that, Donna, because, you know, it wasn't even really an issue or topic in any treatment center I've worked. I mean, we may have talked about it, but we labeled it, but it wasn't really, there wasn't anything there to really deal with that issue. And it is a separate issue, but, you know, I've never seen anything like that. And so my work began in 2000, working in Pine Ridge, and been there.
When you were at Chungleshka.
Yes.
Chungleshka Incorporated. You did the batterers re-education group there as well?
Yes, I did. Okay. I did the batterers re-education, and of course, we were a Department of Justice grantee program, and there was times where I had to do probation, and so it got me very familiar with the court system and the procedure regarding domestic violence charges, trials, and sentencing, not only in tribal court, but also some of our men that we worked with were adjudicated in Pennington County Court.
Okay, now I'm sure that our listeners are thinking, what is batterers re-education? What are they talking about? And so why don't we talk, why don't you go ahead and explain just what batterers re-education is, and you can go ahead and take your time with that, so because we want people to understand what we're talking about. And, you know, I want to thank you for, you know, sharing with us where you're from, mm-hmm. and about your family. And of course, we all want to know that, you know, whenever we meet one another, we all say, well, you know, where are you from? And, oh, you related to? And yeah, so that's how it goes in Indian country. So I want to say thank you for that. And go ahead and explain just what is batterers re-education. You might just start with the word batterer.
Sure. Battery is often used as a legal term, and it has to do with violence of abusive behavior, which can range from physical abuse, emotional abuse, abuse that instills fear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've worked with men who never knew they were or would consider using the language batterer, mm-hmm. you know, because they've never hit, but they've used intimidation to get fear, to instill fear as the reason or intent. Now,
and we're talking in terms of a relationship between two people, companions, partners, married, not married, but living together.
Right. I think the key term in defining, you know, battering in a relationship is that the key word is intimate relationship. Mm-hmm. It's two people in an intimate relationship where abusive behavior is done, whether that's just about peer power and control and getting our want and our selfish needs met, or it could be, you know, situational, where, you know, there's battery, abusive behavior, violence, where it could be situational, retaliatory, or pathological, which means that there's mental illness involved or we're under the influence of alcohol and drugs. Falls under that category because the American Medical Association defines addiction as a disease. And so that whole word usage of pathological or pathology is that it does have symptoms. I'm talking chemical addiction. Not to say that battery is an addiction, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. battery is a choice, mm-hmm. and some of us are not aware we're doing those choices, but I think, you know, the dynamic is different for different people, and people are being hurtful and abusive to one another in different situations, and but at the same time, a common denominator is it is about getting power and control. It is about getting our selfish way or what we want our way, or you can label it any way you want, but it's right. about getting what we want out of what's going on at that particular time.
Okay, so I'd like to introduce Lynn as well, and we can move into the real specifics of what actual battering is, or battery, and some of the tactics that are used by the abuser, by mm-hmm. the batterer, and talk more specifically about those things with a little bit more explanation, because many times when people are talking about domestic violence, sexual violence, it's hard to listen to. It's hard to hear. And we want to be sure that people have a clear understanding of each kind of tactic that is used by a batterer. And so we'll move into that in a little bit. But right now, I want to introduce the co-facilitator and also the director of the Women's Lodge, the Domestic Violence Shelter here in Lake Andes. And I'd like to introduce Lynn Archambault. And Lynn, why don't you just go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, and also why the program was introduced here.
My name is Lynn Archambault. I'm very grateful to be here today and to see a program like this available to the families in our community. My family, I'm part of the Archambault family here in Lake Andes. My husband is part of the Yankton Sioux tribe, and we moved our family, Mark, myself, and our son, here in December of last year. I've been a part of the Women's Lodge since February and have been blessed tremendously by the women that I've met there, and the things that I've seen and the growth that I've seen throughout the Women's Lodge. I think this program is so important because, as Richard already said, we have a thought process that if we don't hit, we're not an abuser, or we're treating our partner okay as long as we don't physically hit that person. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that we've learned, that I've learned in being part of this, is only 1-2% of abuse is physical. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of other things that go into an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the thing that we're going to see come out of these groups, is awareness and healing in areas that it's not just about hitting. It's about respect. It's about not intimidating your partner to get your way. It's about not using your children to get your way. There are so many other pieces to the puzzle that we see come together. Mm-hmm. And the men that we've seen come through the group in the last couple of months, almost all of them, without fail, have said, "I didn't realize that I was doing that. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize that was abuse."
So defining for the group participants, what exactly is domestic violence? Because as you said, it encompasses many, many behaviors. And now this is a new program for us. And you started the program in June?
In June, we had our first participants to the program. We've been working with the local court systems. We have flyers out in the community. Of course, now we have this medium to get information out to the public. We have ads in the announcer that give you the time.
Which is the local?
The local free paper, right, here in town. The group is from 5:30 until 8 p.m. every Thursday night at the Resource Center, which is on High Street.
The Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center at 809 High Street,
yes,
in Lake Andes.
In Lake Andes. The number that they can call to get information on the group is 605 487 7130. You can ask to speak with me, Lynn Archambeau, and I'll give you all the information, give you anything that you need to know about the group, how to get here.
So this now I know that there are different avenues that men have come to the group, but it is also voluntary.
Absolutely.
Voluntary. So if there, you know, if we have any listeners out there that are interested in participating in the Batters Re-Education Group, you're certainly welcome to do that. And this, you know, the name says exactly what it is. It's a re-education. It's looking at behaviors, it's discussing behaviors, and it's looking at alternatives and really taking a look at many of our original teachings as Native people and how we relate to one another and how we treat one another. And so there's discussion, of course. The point of the program, the Batters Re-Education Program, is to take a look at those violent behaviors, but also to take a look at who we are and where we come from and how that can help us to have good, healthy relationships with one another. Many times in an abusive relationship, there is love. There is love and there is caring. However, if the relationship is violent, then there are issues that need to be addressed as soon as possible. And that's what this program is going to, is offering and is going to help people define. So now, Lynn, you're co-facilitator. It is a group for men.
It is a group for men. I'm there more as the voice of how it feels from the other side, or how women, you know, I mean, it's just the way it is. Men and women just don't have the same thought process. So sometimes I can bring a perspective to the group that maybe they didn't think about it that way. Richard brings so much to the table from the traditional side and the Native ways that I can, my part comes in the men, how do women really think about things, or how does it make you feel as a woman when the person that you love hits you?
Or is mistreating you, is in controlling
any way.
Your actions.
Absolutely.
Controlling your ability to have other relationships. And we're going to talk a little bit more about tactics that are used, because as the discussion clearly states, when we think about domestic violence, an abusive relationship, most of the time people think in terms of bruises, of hitting someone, of seeing those bruises, of broken bones. It's not just a black eye, but many times the abuse can be brutal, and bones are broken. There are many injuries that can be very serious, and many times a woman may have to go to the hospital and stay in the hospital because of that, because of the abuse that's been inflicted upon her. And so we want to go ahead and talk about the tactics. What tactics are used? And before we do that, and we're going to be visiting with Richard a little bit here. Richard, why don't you go ahead and define for our listeners the different kinds of abuse that in most abusive relationships, if there's one kind of abuse that's happening, there's usually many other kinds of abuses, many other kinds of control issues. So go ahead.
Sure.
And define some of those.
You know, to reiterate what we've been talking about, battery is abusive behavior in an intimate relationship where people, you know, they don't necessarily have to be living together. The key word is intimate. Okay, and battery could include, we talked about physical abuse, which can be hitting, kicking, pulling hair, pinching, punching, you know, where physical contact is done to inflict, which causes hurt and harm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then of course, there to even break that down even more, Donna, you know, when there is physical abuse, it can be that of the nature of a pure batterer's abuse, which involves the intent to get power and control over the intimate partner. Okay, that's mm-hmm. that is the intent. I mean, that's what's premeditated. That's the choice, intent. I mean, by that's the reason, and that's in our belief system, meaning how we think, you know, that we have the right to do mm-hmm. in that relationship. And that's a pure batterer's violence. Okay? Then you have a type of violence that has to do with situational violence, which includes stress. You know, propane is low, there's no Pampers, we're out of gas, one of the children is having trouble in school, and you know, there's just a lot of stresses, and then we're reacting to the stressors, and it comes out violent and abusive. You know, otherwise wouldn't be there. Now, there isn't an intent to get control. It's a way of a conditioned response, if you will. You know,
can you explain that a little more?
Sure. Conditioned response simply means that equating my stress to getting angry, and then angry equates abusive behavior.
So there's a whole thought process that's
absolutely.
Going on there.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm angry, and that equals, this is how
this
I
is what I do. This is what I do when I'm angry. I use abusive behavior. And we may say, I blew up, I lost it, I lost control. We're not using alcohol as a blame. We're using our anger and emotion as a blame. And whenever we use anger or our emotion as a blame or anything as a blame, we will not change.
And in fact, when an abuser says, well, you know, I just lose control. You know, I just lost it, like you said. I just lost it. You know, I had it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really sorry. And, you know, I didn't intend to do that. And in fact, batterers can be really very much in control of how they express themselves in an abusive relationship.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I've witnessed my father tactically choosing where he was going to hit my mother, where she wouldn't show bruises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I saw him. You know, and I have done abusive behavior and actions where I intentionally knew what I was doing, and it's because I didn't want to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about. It's not a, you know, if we have...
It's not a loss of control.
Absolutely
on
not.
Part.
Absolutely not.
They're very much in control of
what we're very
doing.
Much in control, and we're very much aware of our choices. And that's why we re-educate ourselves to look at something that it's really a tough pill to swallow when we've done something for so long and we've seen it around us and, you know, and so it's so instilled in our belief system, which is simply how we think, our thoughts, our values, our opinions, you know, and specifically our belief system with our partners. And if, you know, I can remember growing up, Donna, and my heroes growing up was, one of them was Kenneth. And man, Kenneth, he could dance, he worked hard, he was athletic, you know, he played hard. And he fought hard, and I remember when we were children sitting in the back of his pickup, and he would take us around because the wives liked it when us younger kids went, because maybe that would not, they wouldn't get carried away and crazy, mm-hmm. you know, so there's children in the back, you better not, and so we would go with them. This is in the 70s now,
mm-hmm.
you know, growing up, and I remember Kenneth dropping all the other kids off, and I was going home last, so I got to sit up in the truck with him, and he said, Richard, when you get a girlfriend, when you're ready to get serious and she's the one you want to marry, hit her once. Just hit her once, though. Damn it, just hit her once. And I sat there in awe, you know, and in his instruction. And that was to lay the foundation where, you know, if I do it too much, I'm going to go to jail or I will get arrested or, you know, but if I did it that once, I can get away with it.
And she knows that she has to behave herself.
Because all I got
to the way you would like her to behave.
And that's a batterer's violence. And situational violence is has to do with their stressors, and the reaction is to get angry, and if I'm angry, then there's violence, either from her or from him. And then the next one that I wanted to share with the listening audience is retaliatory. There's a retaliatory violence that has to do with, you know, exactly what it sounds like, retaliating. And a lot of violence done in intimate relationships, and this type of violence is done by women, you know, who retaliate. And that doesn't mean men don't retaliate, because we do too, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember going to the bar with my mother and hand in hand, and she's taking me in there. And I remember we walked up to where my dad was sitting, you know, at the bar, and he was on his stool. And she just walks up to him and slaps him in the face. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, what was that about? Mm-hmm. You know, and when I started learning about my own abusive behavior and the things I've witnessed, I started to make the personal connections. Mm-hmm. And then that was an example of retaliational violence.
And she did that because?
She did that because she chose a public platform, mm-hmm. meaning a public place, mm-hmm. because that would ensure that my father wouldn't retaliate.
Right. She had some level of safety.
Absolutely. And with me there, it also added more, it dare I say, leveled the playing field.
Yeah, and when I say some level of safety, I don't mean that, because many times, you know, women will retaliate when they feel that, you know, there's nothing left to do. And it's not that they're safe. I mean, there's many times a woman will go in and do that, and, you know, he'll just turn around and lay her out. But, you know, I want to be real clear, when we're talking about retaliatory
violence in an intimate relationship.
In an intimate relationship. Because, you know, I'm sure people are quite aware that women oftentimes have gone to prison because they have taken retaliation against their abusive partner, and either end up there for
murder
charges.
Attempted murder.
Or attempted murder or aggravated assault, when in fact there comes a point in a relationship, an intimate relationship that's very abusive, where it seems like the only thing left to do, the only way to remove yourself from that situation is to retaliate on the abuser.
Right. And I think earlier this summer there was a real prime example of that that was all over the internet and news, where there was this Southern Baptist minister's wife who murdered her husband. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting what the outcome of that trial will be, because I'm very curious. And that's a good example of retaliation on an extreme level, mm-hmm. where, you know, the sad part is life was taken, you know. And
right,
we're, as we talk about these violences, I want to, you know, let the listeners know that this is what we've studied and learned about violence, that there's more types of situations. One size doesn't fit all in regards to violence in an intimate relationship. And the next one that, you know, that I'm aware of is called pathological violence, which includes mental illness, and also it includes being under the influence of alcohol and drugs. And so that falls under that category. But we know, as people in the field, Donna, that we know that alcohol is not the blame of violence. But it just fits in this category because, again, I said earlier, because addiction is categorized as a disease.
Right.
And that's why it has a symptomology, it has a remission, it has, you know, it has the characteristics of the common cold.
Mm-hmm.
It has, you know, so... You know, those are the different types of violences that can go on in an intimate relationship.
Donna. And there's also economic, spiritual.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're starting to talk about the different types of means to control our partner, or tactics, and which include isolation, which is when we control what she does, who she sees, you know, what she reads, limits her outside involvement. And it, you know, and it, And you will find that is a tactic in all types of abusive behavior, bullying, you know, where there's control, you know, at its root. There's intimidation. We talked about that. That's threats. That's what Kenneth was teaching me, you know, that if I do this act of violence, I won't have to hit again. All I need to do is just intimidate her, scare her.
Give her that look.
That hard look. That,
and intimidation is really...
That mean mug look, you know.
Yeah. Intimidation is really used, you know, I could be wrong on this, but possibly more often than any other form, any other tactic, is just to keep your partner intimidated. I experienced that myself, you know. I knew that when I got that look, that whatever he thought I was doing, even though I wasn't,
right,
that
right.
I better just, you know, stop what I'm doing and just kind of line out. Yep. Because if I don't, I'm going to get it one way or the other.
Right, right. And so, you know, but that also has many different, you know, there's different avenues we can express that. We can do it by hitting walls. We can do it by destroying her property, hurting her pets, driving fast while she's in the vehicle with mm-hmm. us.
That's real common.
Oh, yes. That, you know, and when I say that, when, you know, every now and then, you know, a man in our group will say that, and I say thank you, because that's probably one we really overlook, you know, is driving fast to intimidate.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional abuse. And then the one I really like and get into because of my chemical dependency background is the, you know, the tactics of minimizing, lie, and blame, which are defense mechanisms. And I really like talking about defense mechanisms, because what we're talking about is something we don't like to talk about. You know, I mean, I remember when I have teachers and people who have helped me on my healing journey who are older than me, and they can remember the days when it was, you know, shameful and uncool to say, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict,
mm-hmm.
back in, you know, the early 70s, and counselors were referred to as AA counselors, mm-hmm. and they would have their stories where, you know, using that kind of language to identify themselves with of behaviors and actions and things they're trying to change, you know, wasn't cool. And I see, you know, the same thing here with the word of a batterer, mm-hmm. you know, that label just doesn't sit well with us, even though it's everywhere. You know, mm-hmm. it's not just on our reservations, and it's not just with, you know, poor neighborhoods, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's everywhere in every race and every economic peoples
mm-hmm.
and different cultures, you know. So I really like talking about that piece. And then of course there's using the children as a tactic of getting control, and economic abuse, which involves, you know, using money as a means to control her. There's coercion and threat. And it's a little different from intimidation. Coercion and threats is, you know, makes and or carries out threats to do something to hurt her. It's really verbalizing, which also includes emotional blackmail, like saying, I'm going to kill myself, you know, or I'll hurt.
A lot of times what happens there is, I'm going to kill myself, and then it moves to, or I'm going to kill you, and or I'm going to kill both of us. Somebody will take care of the kids.
You know, Donna, that is the missing piece between men understanding why there is a difference. It's that fear. You know, and that is the magic wand that separates genders here. We, as males, are taught and conditioned early on in being little boys to grow up to men that we're taught not to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
When we're, you know, when we're taught, don't be afraid of getting on that horse. You get bucked off, you get back on. Big boys don't cry. You know, we're conditioned to not be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of us were, you know.
Or at least to hide that fear.
Oh, yes. You know, and then, and it's on a continuum, meaning mm-hmm. there's that teaching where I've had teachers who say, you know, who that I have now that saying, you know, fear is an emotion that we need to understand and you know, have and accept, you know. And you know, I heard someone, and we're starting to be aware of this because, you know, we're starting to see behaviors that exemplify bravery. And you know, and I saw on the news that is piped out of Sioux Falls, and it was a boy who was drowning with a disability. And then another boy who saw that jumped in the lake to save him.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing he said in his interview was, the first thing I felt or thought was, I was afraid. You know, without bravery, then, you know, with bravery, there has to be some fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so fear is a very, and our ancestors knew that. We weren't in denial of all our emotions that exemplified, you know, Ekchewichasha, or being a good man, or being, you know, someone in the community who understands, you know, their role. And fear is something that we have to be okay with having.
Right, and fear isn't a bad thing. As a matter of fact, fear motivates us to do many things, like your example you were just talking about. One thing I did want to make sure that we acknowledge is that you had talked about, you know, making reference to growing up and witnessing violence around
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us have had that experience or are living that now. And, you know, there may be the abusive relationship between mom and dad or whatever, and also with the children. Now, I think what is important to recognize is that there are people who grew up in the same family. Say, okay, we're talking about an abusive, violent home life.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone grows up in the same household. And that doesn't mean that everyone's going to grow up and be abusive to someone they care about. Someone, you know, there may be one person who grows up and becomes abusive, and the sibling will grow up and not use that abusive behaviors to control someone. So just to be very clear about that.
Right, Don. I think you really, you know, nailed it on the head there. When one size doesn't fit all, and there's just no, as much as we like things to make sense and to have 1 + 1 = 2 here, you know, I've worked with men who have never seen their parents fight. You know, they didn't see any physical violence in the home, but they're sitting there wondering, why am I battering when I've never seen it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've worked with men who, you know, and met men who have grew up in extremely violent homes and choose not to,
mm-hmm.
you know, abuse their partner.
Yes.
And we dialogue that, and we talk about that, and we bring it to the table, and we process that. And that's one of the areas we talk about, you know, why is that there? And you know, and we know some of the reasons why that's there. And we do talk about those, Donna, and where we see and where we learn, you know, control and get control issues from. But there's two more pieces I wanted to share, Donna, and I think this is an area where I think Indian people have done very well in regards to examining themselves and to create change if there's, you know, hurt going on and hurt to themselves. Is when we talk about domestic violence, we also include cultural abuse, and we
mm-hmm.
also include ritual abuse,
mm-hmm.
you know, and which, you know, it also exists in other cultures. It also
mm-hmm.
exists within Christianity, and it also exists. And, you know, it's just how we are interpreting that way of involving culture and rituals and,
right.
and belief system, where we've right. changed that or manipulated that to fit our, you know, control and our outcome of
right.
controlling her using rituals and culture.
Okay, so just to kind of cap it off, because we're going to be visiting with Richard and Lynn much more in the future. This is going to be one of our regularly scheduled programs, and looking at how the re-education of those who are violent, men who are violent, is helping to change those behaviors, helping them to, first of all, really understand what those behaviors are. And so we are talking with Richard Milda and Lynn Archambault, and they are both co-facilitators for the Batterers Re-Education Program that is sponsored by the Women's Lodge, the domestic violence shelter here located in Lake Andes. And we've been discussing what is the program, why the program was started here, and how that program works and who should be involved with that program. So I'm going to ask Lynn if there's anything in particular that you would like to add to this discussion before we wrap this conversation up for this evening. And as I said, we'll be a regular program and this will be rebroadcast for you to listen to again, or to be sure that maybe there's someone that you would like to hear the program. So Lynn, is there anything in particular that you'd like to share with the listeners before we sign off for this evening?
I would just like to say that the big word here is re-education. It's not about judgment. It's not about blame. It's about re-educating men in the lifestyle maybe that they've been brought up in the society that we've, you know, those things that we've been taught. It's about changing our belief systems and about re-educating, giving someone the tools that they need to live a nonviolent lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
There's objectives that we set for the class from the very beginning when people first come in, and one of those is to reach a nonviolent lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And to identify and practice non-abusive behaviors. So again, it's not about blame and judgment. It's about re-education.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about healing families. And I'll just give the number one more time for more information.
Absolutely.
You guys can call 605-487-7130. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Someone will answer that phone. And we can give you information about the class. We can give you information just about domestic violence as what it is, and help you in any way that we can help re-educate and get these new thought processes out there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lynn. Richard?
And I can't, say it enough. I like the way Lynn said it. You know, my intent is like Lynn said, you know, that someone else, you know, we've been judged enough. You know, men have been treated like junkyard dogs and in men, you know, and someone's already judged you. And here in the group, in the class, we it's not punitive. And once you've come, if you want to come and visit and sit in, you know, then I welcome you to come in and sit in. You will get an orientation, like Lynn said. We'll go over objectives. We'll go over some, you know, there'll be nothing up our sleeves. There's no, you know, everything's on the table. Everything's, you know, up front and what we do. And we'll go over the material and we'll do an intake. And because, you know, we can't do the healing. And that word may be used. What we're going to do is present some information in a way that may help you look at some areas that you want to change in your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love it when men come, Donna, to the class and they say, well, she does that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there we go. The discussion is on.
It's on.
It's on
there.
You know, and
it's, like you said, now this is not, you know, Lynn and Rich standing in front of the class and giving a lecture. There's a real participation here, and there's refreshments if that helps someone to come.
get Indian men to come. Get Indian people. We'll feed you.
cookies and coffee but it is really around the table.
Yes. And I want to say, you know, the most effective groups like this is when there's a male and female person there, you know, who's aware of the shaming that might go on or the collusion that might go on, you know. And we'll get into those terms as we go further on in programming. But, you know, Lynn's there again to you know, not mother hen us and say you guys are all
shame on us
and repeat it, you know. She's there to give a woman's perspective because, mm-hmm. you know, guys, we communicate on a different level. And our ancestors had that down to a pat with, right. you know, understanding the roles and associated with gender and how we're supposed to conduct ourselves with you know, there is a difference, you know, and it's even in our language. Women speak differently than mm-hmm. men do because we're aware of the differences of gender. But at the same time, you know, there's so much teaching, and our strength is our culture.
And we will be talking about all those things, as you said, in the programming as we move along. And it really is about how we relate to one another, how we create those relationships with one another and with ourselves. And we talk in terms of, you know, the role of men and the role of women, but really for us as Native people, it's all about relationships.
It's in the language. It's how we're supposed to respond to one another. And I want to, one more thing, Donna, before I wrap, I want to say hello to my wife, Tawa, and my children. If you're listening, I told them, you know, the website, and I'll be on the air. And, you know, my youngest daughter, Deanna, is probably, you know, I could just see her, and my stomach's tingling thinking about her. Daddy's on the computer.
Dancing around the living room.
Yeah, you know, so thank you for allowing me to come here and share, you know, and that I'm always learning too. You know, and we're never too old to learn, and old dogs do learn new tricks, you know, and change is scary, and change at the same time is, there's many of us out here waiting for people to take that risk.
Right, and nothing risked, nothing gained. And, you know, I'd just like to say hello to Tawa too, and the children at home, and to all our relatives out there who are listening. We want to say, you know, good evening to you, and, you know, we're hoping that you're having a good, comfortable evening, and that things are well with you. And we appreciate you listening to us. And if you have any questions for Rich and Lynn, or Rich or Lynn, we do have an email that's available, and that is dakotatalk@yahoo.com. dakotatalk@yahoo.com. And we welcome, you know, constructive comments, possibly suggestions. You know, you might have questions. You might be thinking, I act like this. I wonder if I'm being abusive, or if I'm being controlling. You know, just slip us an email, and they can answer your questions for you too. You know, even though we're having this discussion, and it's pretty informal as we do this programming, you know, there may be something that we missed that is very important to you. So once again, we will be talking about many, many things through the coming months, with Richard Milda and Lynn Arshambo, co-facilitators of the Batterers Re-Education Program, here Thursday nights from 5:30 to 8 p.m. And, of course, it's confidential. You know, maybe we should just go ahead and address that real quick for people about confidentiality.
Sure. The only reporting that we do, when people come to the groups, Donna, is that they attend, that they have attended, and report to the courts that this is their attendance. You know, we don't do anything subjective, because meaning that we don't talk about what they said in group. We do tell the as we do the orientation, we tell them that, of course, if we're talking hurting ourselves, you know, and are hurting someone else, that we will explore that, and if need be, we, you know, that's where confidentiality is broken.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why there's two, it's kind of, well, there's a lot of reasons, but the two that come to mind right away is that, number one, I will not say to a court that because they completed this program, they will not abuse again,
mm-hmm.
or they're fixed, or they're well. I don't think any program can measure that or guarantee that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right now, to date, the only thing that we share is if they're attending and if they complete it.
Okay. And the actual, so from beginning participation to completion of the program is how long?
24 classes.
24 classes, so that's 24 weeks.
Right.
Okay.
And if there is anything we need to share, then we do a release of information, and that's part of programming. If we need to talk to other, you know, agencies where we need to facilitate into other help areas.
Yeah, if there's other services that someone may want.
Yes,
yeah.
And so everything is, like we said, everything, all that gets brought out in the orientation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thank you for joining us tonight. Enjoy your evening. And we're going to be playing a little music for you throughout the evening. Thank you, Lynn and Richard. Hey.